Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our friend Adam Thierer. He's joining us now. He's the director of telecommunication studies at the Cato Institute. He's an old friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. Adam, there are two taxation issues going on right now simultaneously with regard to the Internet, and I want you to help us sort through those. One is Internet access, literally like the tax that you pay. The $2 or $3 that you pay or whatever when you get your phone bill, there's a couple of $3 in there that's for a telephone tax, telecommunication tax. There's that issue, taxation of literal access to the Internet. And then there's the other one, which is set tax on purchases made on the Internet. And I want you to – now, obviously, we don't have a hard time understanding the difference in those two, but both of those are going on simultaneously right now. I want you to help us understand.
Well, that's right. Well, you just did a pretty good job, Jim, of explaining the difference between the two. And it basically comes down to, as you said, a question of the tax that you might pay on your basic access to a broadband or internet-based high-speed network versus the taxes you might pay once you're on those networks and you buy something.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a sales tax on the latter, but the former would be a tax on your actual right just to gain access to a network.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's currently being debated in Congress, and there's a bill that's very close to being finalized called the Internet Tax Freedom Act. Now, the Internet Tax Freedom Act was originally passed in 1997 as a temporary moratorium on taxes on Internet access. So this would be basically like a tax on your, say, your AOL account.
Mm-hmm.
Or your SBC broadband, or your Cox or Comcast cable modem.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of bucks either by federal, state, or local officials to basically say, we're going to be taxing you on your ability to gain access to these networks. Well, the bill would basically say, no, you can't do that. We're going to prohibit state and local taxes on your right to gain access to the Internet. Now, most people think that's a pretty good idea because obviously, we want to encourage more people to get online. There's been concerns about a so-called, quote-unquote, digital divide in this country,
mm-hmm.
saying some people are technological haves and have-nots. Well, you don't want to discourage anybody who's at the margin from getting online by imposing new taxes and cluttering up this wonderful new environment. Okay, so far, so good. The problem is a lot of state and local officials already have, as you mentioned, a lot of taxes on our telephone bills or on our cable bills.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of these high-speed Internet networks are being built on top of the old telecom and cable networks of the past.
Infrastructure. Mm-hmm.
And so there's this question of where you draw lines. And so many times when we talk, Jim, we get into this debate of, you know, regulation, at least telecommunications regulation, is often a definitional game. How you define something or where you draw these lines determine how its taxed or regulated. And so we get in, once again, to the disturbing question of, do we draw a line between the past and the present and the future, or do we basically say that the old legacy rules and taxes of the past will be rolled onto the latest new technology that comes to town? And that's exactly what some people are talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So the congressional effort that's currently underway would make this Internet access tax ban permanent. Before, it's only been a moratorium that was temporary in its effect, first 3 years and then 2 years extension. And now we're talking about extending it forever. Now, some people say, well, wait a minute. In the future, we won't be able to differentiate between these types of services, Internet access, telecom access, when we have, as we've talked about on your show before, Internet telephony,
right,
or what's called VOIP.
Right.
Well, who knows what's telecom or what's Internet or anything else? Well, you know, there's some truth to that.
What you're saying, Adam, is that as we go to Internet telephony, where we use the telephone over the Internet, and we don't use our telephones anymore, then all that tax revenue, if they make the tax ban on the Internet access permanent, then all
right.
that tax revenue that they're currently getting for telephones could ultimately one day go away.
Potentially dries up. That's correct. It could happen. I'm not saying it's inconceivable. Now, of course, the regulators and the tax officials could continue to try to play games to try to separate these things and say, well, that's an apple, that's an orange, but in the future, everything looks, you know, like a different type of fruit, and it all looks like the same type of fruit. So the problem is, how do you tax or regulate in that environment? Well, there's two easy answers here. One is you basically tax or regulate everything up, or you deregulate or cut taxes on everything to deregulate down. Mm-hmm. Now, I prefer to go that route where you basically say, why in the world is it that we've been littering just loading up our current telephone and cable bills with all these crazy taxes and fees to begin with? People get their phone bills and say, what the heck is this charge and that charge? And there's this long list of itemized things, and nobody knows what the heck any of them mean. And the funny thing is, there's taxes and fees you sometimes don't even see on your phone
right.
bills.
Right, exactly.
So my argument's always been we shouldn't be using our telephone bills as a little tax Christmas tree for state and local officials.
Well, but it's just one of many examples, though, Adam. There are many things. I mean, every time we turn, we take a left or a right turn, somebody wants to find a way to tax us.
That's right. And unfortunately, in the world of telecom, they've done that. The reason they've done that is simple, and I understand why they've done that. In the past, it was a regulated monopoly. You had one phone company per region. You know, why not load them up with taxes? Everybody needs a phone, so this is an easy way to raise some additional tax revenues.
Right.
And there are some local communities, and I understand this, they really do depend on a lot of those revenues for a lot of important services. It doesn't make it right, though. I mean, there's a better way to go about taxing people. We could have a longer discussion about that some other day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, frankly, I don't think the best way to go about taxing people or taxing, businesses to raise important public revenues is by loading up your phone bill with indirect hidden charges.
Well, let's talk about what is happening literally at this moment.
Sure.
Congress is considering this permanent forever ban, right?
It's already passed the House. It's in the Senate.
It's in the Senate.
It's being stalled in the Senate by a couple of senators who are concerned about the impact on the states.
Who are they?
Lamar Alexander is leading this effort, and Dorgan on the Democratic side.
Dorgan is, where is he?
Dorgan's from
Ohio.
Which one of the Dakotas is he from?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he
North or I can't remember.
Yeah, okay. So we got bipartisan opposition, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing you quickly realize about this issue is that it makes for the very strangest of bedfellows.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes both for the Internet access component of it, where you have Congressman Chris Cox, a pretty hardcore libertarian-type Republican, teaming up with Ron Wyden, a fairly hardcore liberal Democrat, to support the Internet Tax Freedom Act. They originally wrote it together, and they've once again penned the latest revision of it together.
As you say, strange bedfellows. When we come back, we're going to wrap up where the Internet taxation, the access tax, what is going to likely happen to that over the next few weeks and months, and then we're going to talk about that other tax. Sales tax on the internet. Stay with us. 20 after, Adam Thierer is our guest. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Adam Thierer is our guest and our good friend. He's the Director of Telecommunication Studies at the Cato Institute, an organization that I'd like for you to know more about. You can find them at cato.org. And Adam, why don't you tell us a little bit about Cato?
Well, Cato is a nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. And again, people can find out a lot more about Cato if they just come to our website, www.cato.org. But basically, we're a market-oriented, free-market-type think tank. We do public policy research on a whole host of issues, just about everything under this political sun that you can imagine.
And by the way, folks, Adam's got lots and lots of information that he's created, he and a bunch of the other folks like Wayne Cruz, who's also a member of our Brain Trust, and they're on the Cato website, so check it out when you get a chance. Adam, let's talk about, quickly on the Internet Taxation, the Internet Freedom Act, Internet Tax Freedom Act. Is that going to get out of Senate and go to conference and be passed?
Well, it's looking like it will, although these holdups in the Senate, it always is interesting in the Senate because, as you know, the process there makes it such that one or two senators can upend an entire bill and put it on hold almost indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
But just about everything else is in line. The president's already said he's definitely going to sign this as soon as it hits his desk. It passed the House overwhelmingly. You have most other senators ready to go ahead and pass it. I think it will pass. The moratorium, the existing moratorium, expires on November 1st, so we're staring at next week
right.
as the end of it, and a lot of people are going to be concerned. You know, what will happen in the interim when the moratorium expires? Will some states go out and try to tax our broadband accounts, tax our email accounts, whatever it might be? I don't think most will, if for no other reason. Most states don't move that quickly.
Right.
You know, it's a concern. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Quickly, will the taxation bill, when it goes to conference, if it gets out of the Senate, goes to conference, will it have to spend a long time in conference?
I don't think so. I think it'll go through fairly quickly and go to the president's desk once it gets to conference.
Once it gets out of the Senate, there's really not a lot of argument after that, is there?
No, because they've already worked out some of the finer points of detail that
right.
People have been bickering over.
So maybe it can make it by the end of the week. Okay, let's move over and talk about. By the way, is there anything we can do? Should we call our senators? If you believe in the Internet Freedom Act, call Senator Alexander.
Yeah, for some people that are fired up about it and care about it, it always helps to make those calls, write those letters, or in this case, send those emails to your senators about this, or even your House representatives. And that's always an effective strategy, but in this case, an email strategy might be the most effective and the most sensible given the nature of the subject.
What about sales tax? That's
well,
a whole
the sales
other
tax issues, yeah, is far more controversial and complicated. We would need a two-hour show to really get into all the intricacies of it. In fact, I just released a 50-page paper on the issue. It's so complicated. But basically, in a nutshell, once we get beyond the issue of the access to the Internet, you have a question about the transactions or e-commerce activities on the Internet, and will they be subjected to traditional state and local sales taxes? The problem is, quite obviously, when you're dealing with Internet commerce, you're dealing with interstate commerce.
Right.
And we know from our old civics textbooks that there are some special rules for the interstate market regarding how a state or local government can tax or regulate things that are in the stream of interstate commerce. So we're in touchy ground here because obviously we're talking about a sales tax that is primarily, entirely state and local in character. We have no national sales tax in America, obviously.
Thank God.
So that's the real nature of the problem. A state or local tax base applied to what is unambiguously national commerce in character.
But there are some unfair things going on right now, aren't there, Adam? Because a local retailer has to charge his customers tax, whereas somebody operating, you know, in the floor above them, only on the Internet, doesn't have to collect taxes.
Well, that's right.
Another example is I just bought a computer, and the company that I bought it from has a nexus in my state, so they had to charge me tax. If I'd bought it from another company who didn't have a nexus, they wouldn't have had to charge me tax. So that's a few hundred
right.
dollars disparity.
Let's explain to listeners really quick what nexus is, because that's important. In a nutshell, nexus is, it's a concept of jurisprudence that basically says a state or local government can only tax those companies who have physical presence within their jurisdiction.
An operation.
It basically says no taxation without representation.
Right.
So it's a good, solid principle of American jurisprudence. We've applied that to interstate companies in the past, such as mail order and catalog companies, and now Internet companies by extension,
mm-hmm.
and said, no, if you're a state or locality and you want to impose tax collection burdens, you cannot require an out-of-state market company to collect those taxes on your behalf. That would be taxation without representation. So the question is, can you find a way to still tax that transaction without requiring the company to collect the taxes for you? That has created a major effort called the SSTP, the Streamlined Sales Tax Project, which is a compact of many different state and local governments to come together and say, let's find a way to simplify our tax collection systems and find a way to require companies, regardless of where they're located, to collect taxes on our behalf by making it very simple for them to do so through simplifying rules and tax definitions and rates, but also finding a way to use computer software to potentially
right.
help eliminate or alleviate the burden.
The problem is the 7,500 different jurisdictions around the country. Adam, we're going to have to talk about that some more the next time. But
sure.
you gave us a good some good thoughts there, and we will finish this another day. Thank you for being here.
Okay, thank you,
Adam Thierer, ladies and gentlemen, with the Cato Institute. He'll be back. quick break. I'll be right back with Tim Liversedge right after these messages. 29 after, the show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.